Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my very own comedy put down. It's Dave Vitti.
Hiya, you alright?
I'm good, mate.
Good.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. So then, Dave, how are we?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you? I mean, last time I spoke to you, you were full of cold and all sorts of lurgy bugs and stuff, but you're looking better.
I'm back on 10 out of 10 at the minute, yeah. Although I'm a bit nippy. It's cold out there.
It is cold out there, but I tell you what, we need to speak to somebody about the cold, or maybe even the lack of, because today's special guest
is a gentleman who's best known as one of the UK's most loved stand-up comedians. He's also an acclaimed actor of stage and screen and has a little bit of a passion for cars, bikes and other much more specialist machinery. He now lives in Australia, where he's speaking to us from today, so I wonder if he's lost that Geordie accent. As we say, good day, can you back a tuna lake? It's Ross Noble.
Hello. I do like the fact you can tell somebody's age by the canny bag of tuna reference. Yeah.
And what age would that be then?
Well, I'm just saying you'd have to be no one under 40 is going to know what a canny bag of tuna is. Yeah, and it's like the fella in the McDonald's advert that used to go, "A fillet of fish for my wife." Remember him? It's like, I mean, it's hardly like one of the greatest ad things ever, but everyone remembers of a certain age.
Yes.
I'm not doing the full accent for obvious reasons, but we all remember it. That's what I'm saying.
Men of a certain age, Ross Noble, men of a certain age, I think that makes us.
Yes.
So, mate, you're in Australia now. Talk us through that.
Yes, I am. I'm on the near Melbourne. And I moved out here. I lived out here for a while and then I moved back and then moved back here. And it's very nice, I have to say.
I can see through that window. It looks quite warm.
Doesn't it, Justin? Yeah, we can see over your left shoulder. We can see some trees and what looks like kind of evening sunshine. It looks warm and inviting, unlike the -6 that it's just been on the school run here in England as I speak to you now. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, so your wife's Australian, is that right, Ross?
Yes. I met her 22 years ago.
Wow.
And came over here, fell in love with the place, fell in love with the country, fell in love with her, and just went, this is, it's great. The trouble is, don't like to, you know, like if you bang on about how brilliant it is, people go, "Oh, what do you hate, Britain?" Oh, it's nice. It's just very nice.
Yeah, it's a nice vibe in Melbourne, isn't it? Really good. Oh. It's kind of, I've been there a few times for racing and stuff, and it's just got this kind of London, but not London-y, but kind of London-y. It's just a cool place, isn't it?
Well, it's sort of like, it feels a bit like kind of, if you took the sort of, especially where we live sort of down the coast, and it's a bit, it's got a kind of London vibe, but then sort of you mixed it with the sort of cool bits of Cornwall.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
So have you, did you come over here for Phillip Island or for Grand Prix?
No, I did. Well, both actually. I did some testing at Phillip Island for and I've raced at Bathurst, but also raced at Sandown Park.
Ah, oh, now, so I, yeah. So Bathurst, so I've cycled around Bathurst. I've ridden I've driven a car around there. I've driven a van around there, a motorcycle, and I've cycled it as well.
It's a hell of a piece of road, isn't it?
It's incredible. And the thing that I don't think people fully realise is the fact that it's a racetrack. It's a proper racetrack, you know, across the mountain and stuff. But there's still, it hasn't been bought out. Like, there's still people that live. A road, and they just live on there. And there's one guy who sells homemade honey. And I always wonder, I always think, does he pull the sign in? Like when they're doing a Bathurst 1000, because I'm always fascinated by, like, you know, like it's like the Isle of Man, for example, TT, there's one of the corners, which is, it's like the wildlife park. And there's a giant, it's like a giant otter. There's a picture of this otter. and I sort of think, you know, like people working out like what their breaking points are.
Yeah,
and, you know, oh, there's that tire, you know. And I always just think people that come to the TT for the first time. They're flying around. And then, you know, 180 mile an hour, whoosh, giant otter.
Then, anchors on.
And then you, whoa, like that, you know. And I thought if you were unscrupulous, if you were like a sort of Dick Dastardly figure,
yeah.
And that's not enough of that in racing, I don't think. You could get a giant otter and
place, oh, and move it.
And put the otter like several, like 100 meters, like closer, and then it'd be hard on the brakes. And they go, hang on, where's the corner? Oh, and then you go speed up again. And then there needs to be, I think that's what's missing from professional racing of all types.
More underhand trickery. Yeah.
A Dick Dastardly element.
There's definitely a bit of that goes on behind the scenes, tell you. Oh, okay.
In what sort of way? I mean, do people sort of mess with someone else's cars or tyre pressures or stuff? Or what happens, JP?
No, there's just lots of little mind games which go on beneath the surface. And
like sledging in cricket, but in a
exactly
car
like that.
Right,
yeah, okay. Exactly like that. But using the press and using other engineers from other teams to drop a little rumour around. I can remember working at racing schools, you know, and we would move cones. Just for that reason, just to cause some hijinks. Do you know what I mean?
Brilliant. My other favourite thing about Phillip Island as well, like I used to go down there, I used to do quite a lot of track days on the motorbike, you know, and my favourite thing about Phillip Island is the fact that the wind, depending on, like, the wind can change so quickly. So, like, you know, if you're on a bike and you're going down that, you know, you're going down the main straight and the wind's against you and you go... You know, and I'm not top level, so when it goes wrong, it goes wrong. You know, and you go down that main straight, and then you go, all right, okay, so this is where I need to be all ready, and I'm going to brake here. But then the wind changes, and it's behind you, and you get to it, and you go, I'm fine, you go, oh no. And then, because it's right on the coast as well, I think it might have been Chris Vermeulen, I'm not sure, but there was... No, it wasn't. It was John Hopkins, I think it was. A seagull literally.
I've seen. Flew,
have you
I've,
seen? And
I've
it
seen
just,
the video.
It's a bit like the. Have you ever seen the footage of Fabio on the roller coaster?
Oh yeah,
where
he gets
hit by the bird. But yeah, he literally just got. He just got like hit in the face with a seagull, which just exploded. And
Well, I'll tell you what happened last time I did Bathurst back in 2000, whenever it was, in the V8 car. Jim Richards coming through turn one, two. So after the first big straight up the hill, then you've got that really quick right hander. And just before you get to where the cutting is, Kangaroo jumped over the fence straight to the windscreen.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's it. Game over.
I mean, they're big animals, aren't they, kangaroos?
Oh, mate,
I mean,
he made such a mess of the car. I mean, the car was it. Stopped.
But they're sort of denser than humans. Yeah. They're a bit taller, denser. Yeah. But also, they've got tiny little hands. So when the car's coming towards them and they're going, no, stop. It's not like, whoa, you're going to hit me. They go like that. You would know who this. You would probably know who this was. I went in a Skoda. He's a German. I wish I had remembered his name. I went in a Skoda with a German bloke. That's a way to start the story. rally driver. Right. Skoda at Goodwood.
Right.
And he, you know, on the rally circuit.
Yeah.
And we get in there and he goes, how fast would you like to go? And I just went, look, just go all out. Let's see what happens, right? So we're flying along like that. And he takes off over this jump.
Yeah.
And I'm not a great passenger. I love driving, but I hate being a passenger. So I sort of force myself sometimes, if I get the opportunity to go in with somebody who's really good, like I went on the back of the two-seater MotoGP bike with Randy Mamola, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you're never going to find out unless you do it. So I'm in this thing, and this circles back to what we're talking about. Just relax. I can see you going, where's this going? So we're flying around this circuit, and like a pheasant just walks out in front of the car. And you know, normally, like when you're driving along, your natural reaction, you see some wildlife, you think, I might just lift off a little bit. But this guy was like, he's a full-on rally driver. And as far as he was concerned, it's just like, no, no, this is... And literally fair game, yeah. This it steps out in front of us, and it hits the front of the car, and this pheasant just explodes like it. It's just like just blood and feathers. And this fella, he didn't even. I wish I knew who it was. He didn't even flinch, and he just went, "Poor bird."
Is it Armin Schwartz?
Yeah, it might be him. Yeah. Yeah,
it might. Yeah, could go to
it. Yeah. It was good though. Anyway,
I'm just pleased that you referenced the Fabio roller coaster video, which is one of my favourite things of all time. In fact, sometimes when I'm feeling wintry and down, I just put that on because it just makes me smile. JP, if you haven't seen it, it's the best thing you have to see.
Just gonna make a note for it.
It's
now.
Just so good, and the look of the face when he's got all that kind of like pigeon blood or whatever on his nose is too pro. Ross, in terms of you and Australia, so how does it work? Because obviously you're doing what you do out there, you're gigging and whatnot. Yeah. Is that something that, did you have to start that from scratch? And in that respect, you know, was that a bit of a risk in terms of going out there and starting again? Or did you already have a sort of following wind in terms of a fan base out there?
No, the first time I came out here, when was it? It was 99. So okay. I was sort of balancing the two, the two countries, and then it just went massive over here, and then so now I sort of split my time between the two. You know, I'm back all the time if I need to do something. I mean, it's terrible for the environment, but I do essentially commute. You know, and people, it's terrible, and I feel guilty. And then when I'm sitting on that plane. Just and they're bringing you food, and I'm eating, and I'm because I basically, if I wasn't on the long haul flight, I'd be sitting in a hotel watching movies back to back anyway. So
you might as well travel and do it. Yeah,
it's exactly the same, but you get something out of it at the end of it. You know,
but the plane's going anyway, whether you're on it or not. So you may as well get on it. That's the way I think about it.
I mean, that is one way of looking at it. I don't know if Greta would agree.
She's locked up now, so that's all right.
So you just look at it and just go, well, somebody's going to set fire to this mattress if I don't.
Someone else is going to fly tip this wardrobe on that country lane if I don't.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure it stands up, JP, with environmentalists, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm going to be quiet now about the environment.
otherwise, you might get cancelled, and we don't want that, do we? You know,
no, we don't.
Ross, take us back then. You've already sort of said, and we know that bikes are more your thing than cars. So, in terms of your early sort of motoring ownership, if you like, where does it begin? Does it start with bikes? Does it start with the first car? What's the step one?
It starts with Ford Fiesta. My dad's Ford Fiesta. And then I learned to drive with that. And then my first car was, it was an MG Metro. And it was, I bought it off another comedian for £150. And he said to me,
it was a cracking car then, eh?
But to be fair, I bought it off this other comic, Brummy guy, and he went, I've done every single gig I've ever done in that car, and it's absolutely solid, no problem at all. Just don't drive it over 70 miles an hour. And I was like, okay then. So I always kept under 70, you know, I kept bang on 70, and then, you know, I was kind of, it was a long trip home, and I was probably in a bit of a hurry. And it crept up, and I got it up to 80, and I just thought, oh, this will be fine. It's not like, you know, I'm on the motorway. It's lit. There's nothing around us. 80 miles an hour. And I pulled up outside my house, and it burst into flames. And, apparently the wiring loom. And so that was the same car where I had I opened the door because I'm a bit like, this is the problem with me and driving. I sort of like get quite easily distracted, and I opened the door one night without really looking to see what was coming. And in the days of this sort of like in the 90s where illegal minicabs were like all the rage, you know?
Yeah.
And this minicab just took the door off the car and it was spinning in the road. And I got out and I looked down and the guy looked at me and he clearly had no insurance. He had no, and I just looked at him and I thought, I'll take a punt on this. And his car was all smashed up and I just went, should we just pretend it didn't happen? He went, oh, thank you. And then he drove off. So I just shoved the door back on, but it wouldn't stay on. So what I did was, because I've got a bit of a history of bodge repairs, I tied a piece of rope. Like I had to have both the windows down a crack. Yeah. And then I had a piece of rope tied around holding the door on.
Yeah.
And then I had to get in through the passenger side for quite a long time. And then I went through. Then what I would do is I would buy cars, obviously, because I didn't have a lot of money back then. I would just buy cars and I'd just hammer them into the ground, you know.
Mm.
So I went through a phase of I had an Astra van for a while and then I had a Cavalier estate that I had like a mattress in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Just for when I was doing gigs, just right. Sounds a bit travel that. Like let's do that.
Cavalier is a good name when you've got a mattress in the back of your estate. Yeah, exactly. It's a very Cavalier approach to dating and life generally.
Yeah.
Because you can get that film you stick on the weight windows, which makes it look steamed up all the time, can't you, in the back?
Oh, very nice. Well, I needed that because there was only me in there. And then I had a Ford Granada Gear.
Nice.
Because this was when I went through this phase where I realized that basically you could buy cars that had been the absolute top of the range a few years ago. And I suppose now you don't really get secondhand cars the way they used to, do you? It's sort of like, I mean, maybe, but I got this beautiful, it's almost like a mint green Ford Cavalier Gear. It had all the stuff and the beautiful car, like electric windows at the time. I was like, wow. And I had that for a bit. And then I discovered that you could buy a Jag really cheap. I mean, they're juicy, but there was a Scottish guy, Phil Kay, had one, and then Bill Bailey had one for a bit. And it was one of those things where I said to Bill, I said, oh, you got rid of your Jag. And he goes, yeah, right, yeah. I was doing a Friends of the Earth benefit, and I thought it wasn't really good luck. And so I realized you could just buy it. So I bought this. I think it's about $3,000 or something, which is the most I'd ever spent on a car. Mm. And and I used to have this Jag, which British Racing Green, which I called the Lady.
Yeah.
And we used to drive around in that, doing gigs and stuff.
So you must have a ute down there now in the garage, do you?
Of course I do, yeah. I have a Toyota Hilux.
Nice. Yeah.
And I had one in the UK, actually. I had the same one I got when I was living back there full time. I bought a brand new one. In fact, it was the first brand new car I'd ever bought, black Toyota Hilux. And I was living on a farm, and I thought I had to drive down the lane.
Yeah.
That like the sort of drive bit. To put the bins out like on the road, you know. So I chucked the bins in the back and off I went. And as I've said before, I get quite easily distracted. And it wasn't until I pulled up at the BBC in Wood Lane, and you used to be able to park like in just in front of that donut bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I pulled in there that I realized I still had two full bins in the back of the in the back of the Hilux. Just sitting there like, oh shit. So I do like a ute.
Yeah.
I went through a bit of a phase of I had a I've got a Jeep at the moment. I've got a Jeep Wrangler because I've never had one of them, and I thought that'd be a bit of fun. Well, I say it's a bit of fun. I did have a Mustang. So I had a Mustang and my wife was like, go out and buy a, go out because I've always bought like silly cars. She was like, go out and buy like a proper family car. So I'll get a Ford. So I got a Mustang. And
you're talking about one of the new Mustangs, aren't you?
The new ones. The problem is that my youngest daughter, she's small for her age. So that's a dream because she can get in the back and her little legs just fit in there. And I thought, well, this is win-win. And like, you know, whenever I was thinking, oh, she's grown a bit, I think, oh, I've got to hold on. But then she started getting car sick because she was sort of in the back, like peeping over the tiny window. So she basically went, I'm getting too car sick. So I was instructed to get rid of it.
So what does the fleet currently consist of then? Obviously, you've got the Wrangler, you've got the Hilux. What else have you got in Australia?
BMW, the iX, you know, the electric.
Oh,
my God. I mean, you're looking, he's looking at me going, oh, really?
Oh, hang on. I mean, Jason does a show all about electric vehicles. So,
yeah,
I mean,
I'm nearly converted, actually. I mean, I haven't got one on the drive, but I do think they're getting better in terms of, you know, range and all that sort of stuff. The only thing I find is they're all a bit dull because they don't make any noise. And that's part of the fun of driving the car, isn't it?
Ah, no. But that's the great thing about, and I'm not, I paid for it. I'm not getting any sort of sponsorship from BMW. that iX, right, which is, it's the big 4x4 thing. Mm. It's ridiculous. I mean, like, you know, it's huge, but they got, I mean, you'll know this already, but they got Hans Zimmer, the composer to come up with the sounds. And it's got like a, I mean, they should have got Jean-Michel Jarre to do it. I like the idea that the BMW make a bus version and it plays the Venga Boys. But when you drive it, when you accelerate, it actually goes, so, and it does this sort of like,
Well, you know, because I've wondered about that, because there's a guy that lives opposite us, and I always refer to it as a bit like the ghost car, because when he comes into our little cul-de-sac and then he backs into his drive, and all you hear is this kind of like, just this weird noise as he backs in.
I mean, when I first got it and I was on the drive and I'm reversing and my dogs were literally just like, if I hadn't have noticed they were there, they would have died. I think in their heads they would go, why is this shed moving? It's coming towards us. But yeah, when you come out of like roundabouts or like, you know, as you're sort of coming out of if you're on a bit of a sort of sweeping bend or whatever, if you accelerate, and there's no reason to do this, but you get that, you get the punch of the accelerator and it goes, and sometimes I just, you know, so it's not, obviously it's not the same as an engine, but it's, I think you just set it up so it makes, I can't tell that story. I'm not going to tell that story.
Is that classified?
Yeah.
I tell you the story that we do want you to tell us.
Go on.
Ross, is, do you still have a tank? Yes or no?
No, I had to, when we moved back here, I had to, and some people would argue that it wasn't a tank. It was a self-propelled artillery vehicle. Artillery gun.
Sounds like a tank to me, that.
Yeah, it was a tank. I bought an ex-British Army tank and because I was living in Kent at the time and they've got that War and Peace show down there where all the military vehicle enthusiasts turn up, and that's when it got out of control. I mean, I got like, I think it was up to, I had about 15 bikes at that point.
Okay.
And, I had the Hilux, and then I bought bought this Land Rover. You know that company, Karn?
Yeah.
So I got like a matte black Karn Land Rover Defender.
Nice.
So it's that thing of like most people are driving around, you know, the Karn stuff is all like Lamborghinis and stuff, but I got the most agricultural vehicle I could.
So on the tank, did you have rubber tracks on it so you could drive it on the around the streets?
Yeah, that's a weird sensation, eh? Well, the thing is, it's supposed to be so you can drive around, but as soon as you even turn slightly, it just destroys the road.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. It's not meant to, but it does just destroy the road. So, I used to just drive it. I had some woodland, and what I would do is when we would, with the dirt bikes, instead of, you know, because I argue I was saving money, because if you buy a tractor with a rotary hoe to churn up the ground to make a track for the bikes, that's, you know, that's going to cost a lot of money, isn't it? Whereas you can buy a tank for like 15, 20 grand. And that's like, that's saving, really. That's So I use it, you know, as far as I was concerned, it's an agricultural vehicle. And
with a massive gun on it.
Yeah, well, there is that. I had an argument with the bloke that bought the house next door. He's a property developer. He's a bit of a dick, and he was arguing over where the fence line was and all that sort of stuff. So I just pointed the tank at his pants, and my wife just went, "Have you pointed the tank at his house?" And I went, "Do you think that comes across as a bit passive aggressive?" And she went, "It's not passive aggressive. It's the most aggressive thing you can possibly do. You've literally declared war on the guy." And this was the same bloke who, like, he threatened to block the access road. He was like, "Well, I'll block the access road, blah blah blah." And I pointed out to him that whatever he decides to block that road with, I'll either go over the top of it or, and I said, "If you just look around there," and I had for a while, I bought a JCB as well, for building jumps, you know, and like making obstacles for the trials bikes and stuff. And I said, "So put what you like there, but I'll literally just move it." So but it was great. My everyone who came round I say, "Oh, do you want to ride on the tank, or you can just drive, because it's dead easy to drive." And my mum was down, and I went, I give her a ride on the tank. I said, "I'll have a go driving it." And she was like, "All right, okay." So she gets in. She's only a little woman, so she's like literally like just she can barely see out of the hatch, and she's driving it around. And then my eldest daughter, she just started at play school, I think it was, like, and they'd gone in and they'd said, you know, dropped her off and all that. And she said, "Oh, tell us about life at home. Who's in your family?" And they go, "Oh, I've, you know, my grandma comes down and sees us. And she was here last weekend, and she drives a tank." And they go, "Oh, she's got some imagination, hasn't she?" They were like, "Yeah, right, move on. So, but I love it. I, you know, it's one of those things where, that's the, you know, one of the fun things about having a bit of land, you know, you just buy stuff to drive around. Because that's the thing. I'm not. I know it doesn't sound right, but I'm not like a car enthusiast at all. Mm-hmm. I just love riding and driving, and I love the actual physical, you know, it's go-karts or all that. I love driving, but I'm not the sort of person that goes, "Oh, I never had cars on the wall as a kid." Yeah. I couldn't tell you anything about supercars or anything like that. I don't know anything about them, but I'll happily go, "That looks like fun." And I'm trying to go, "Oh, that's fun. I love that." So,
because you're big into your bikes, aren't you, Ross?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, love it.
And what's in the bike fleet?
Well, I scaled it down, but I've got, what have I got them in? I've got three trials bikes at the moment. I just got a Sherco and a couple of beaters and KTM, an adventure bike, super adventure. and I'm between enduro bikes at the moment. But yeah, I decided to sort of, when we moved back here, I kind of, because it got silly, you know. I had a bike for the track that was all set up for track days, and then I had an adventure bike, and then an enduro bike, and then a trials bike, and then like a scrambler, and it was, you know what I mean? I had a motard, and just one for everything, I've mainly been riding trials recently, so I'm just doing that, you know. So
I would imagine sort of where you are then. I mean, I haven't been to Australia, but I'm guessing that the traffic isn't stupid like it is now. So is it a good place to be a bike rider? I mean, you know, if you're down the coast and stuff, you've got some lovely roads and not crazy traffic.
Yeah, brilliant. And once you get out the cities, there's no traffic at all. You know, I did, when was it? It was a while ago now, but I did a tour 1 year where I started in Brisbane and I did the whole of Australia. Like literally did a full loop and zigzagged around. And I did that all on my bike. I ended up doing 26,000 kilometers around Australia. Yeah. Just like zooming about gig to gig. And some of them, like when we went round the top, and I've done this since, you'll drive for, you know, like once you get north of Perth, you get up to like, you know, sort of Geraldton and Port Hedland and all that. You're literally driving for like, you put it in the sat nav and it says drive for 4 days, then
turn left. I like that.
Then turn left, yeah. And you always miss the turn. And then going across from Adelaide to Perth, there's the Nullarbor Plain, which is just this flat bit of nothing.
Yeah,
and that is like. Just goes on for miles and miles and miles, and there's nothing there apart from the roadhouses.
Yeah.
And then as you're driving along, you've got on the actual road, every sort of 50 or 100 miles or whatever, you'll come to, it's marked out like a landing strip, like an airstrip, and there's a windsock. And that's where the flying doctors land. So you're riding along, and then all of a sudden, you just think you're Tom Cruise. You're on your bike, and you're like, "Hey, I'm on the And there's a bit there on the Nullarbor where, because it used to be a dirt road that went all the way across, and then what they've done is there's a bit where it's literally they got a ruler. And like on, like if you, like you look, they must have got a theodolite, set it up, and just tarmacked it in a straight line. And this bit is actually called, like, if you look at it on the map, it's just dead straight line, and it's called 90 miles straight. And it's 90 miles. I swear to God, it is 90 miles of dead straight tarmac with nothing but 90 miles of pure straight road. And place to hear you.
Ross, before we let you go, we have one question that we ask all of our guests. And I think I've got a feeling that you'll have a good answer for this. What do you reckon, JP?
I reckon he will. So, Ross, we reckon that music and motoring go particularly well together. Mm. So we want your fantasy drive or your ride. Mm. So where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you in or on?
Right. Okay. Well, I can tell you what my favorite one ever was.
Yeah, that'll do.
So this is a real thing. This was a moment where I actually, as I was doing it, I went, "Oh, hang on, this is all right." This makes me look like a sad middle-aged man. But so I was riding. So I was riding across Africa. Right. I rode from Cape Town to Zambia.
Wow.
And we went through Namibia, and I was on a BMW GS 1200 Adventure, and I was in the Namibian desert, and it was no tarmac, just this long desert road, and the sun was shining, and I was going like on a bike, you get the speed up. And then you're in the sand, and then you sort of, the faster you go, it lifts up out of the sand. So you're sort of skipping along, so you're kind of floating, you know, almost like a speedboat. And where the sort of tracks cross, the bike sort of like moves around, it dances around like that. And I was going through the desert and I had my headphones in, and that song Dakota by the Stereophonics came on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was going flat out through the desert listening to that song, and it perfectly, the music perfectly was in time with what the bike was doing. And I was stood up like that, and it was like I was flying. And I think you'd have to be, I think, apart from driving around Ibiza in a bus with the Venga Boys playing, I don't think you could beat that.
It doesn't get better than that. And on that note, JP, I think you need to take us out.
Well, sadly, that's about it for this week's Fueling Round, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, big thanks, but a mega thanks to our very special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Ross Noble. Thanks, pal.
Thanks.
Superb. That. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plater or at David Vitti. And if you like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da.